of our manifesto. If renegotiations are successful, it is the policy of the Labour Party that in view of the unique importance of the decision, the people should have the right to decide.
Yes, well, you see, I think it was Harold Wilson's finest hour, in spite of all the complaints of wheezes and so on, as Tony King calls it, because he said to me afterwards that the height of leadership is to do what you think is right while maintaining sufficient unity to sustain a party and a government while pursuing the objective that they thought was right.
Only for a few years. I mean, you can say he delayed the split in the Labour Party. I mean, Europe has this extraordinary ability to split parties.
Oh, it will split parties forever.
Yeah.
Surely the other phrase that was in Ben Pimlott's book, and I think as the only defender of Wilson on this programme, I better say this.
Not quite. We've just been rather nice about him.
All right, let's leave that aside. But he said that while others had maintained their principal positions, he had had to wade through shit in order to maintain the government's unity and the government's existence.
Yes.
And I suppose that is the ultimate responsibility of a Prime Minister.
Of course, people don't call referendums, Prime Ministers don't, unless they think they're going to win them.
No, well, I mean, I think that is the real problem. They're not actually an expression of ordinary people's opinions at all, because you won't get the chance to vote unless there's a reasonable expectation that enough of you will vote to give the Prime Minister his majority. And we're seeing that with Tony Blair now, as we saw it with Harold Wilson at that time.
Once the referendum had been announced, well, did it go off with a bang or a whimper?
Well, my recollection is of Barbara Castle and Shirley with rival baskets of groceries. And, of course, this was the great complaint of Ted Heath, for example, who said, this is a great issue about the future of Britain in Europe, and instead we're discussing the price of sliced bread.
Well, that's very important to the voters. Well, I graduated from groceries to Iraq. I wonder what happened.
I think it would be a mistake if we let the idea get around retrospectively that this was a boring campaign. I mean, I agree with Tony Benn immensely. It was an exciting campaign. And he's absolutely right that people at that time were prepared to attend public meetings, listen carefully and make up their minds.
The other thing I think is just worth saying is the enormous disparity there was in terms of money at the time of the referendum.
The campaigns were essentially headed by the leading politicians on the yes and no side, and that's partly what made it so exciting. There was no blanket from Number 10,
but surely
which said this mustn't be debated.
It was known that Wilson and Callaghan were in favour of staying in.
But they didn't play a large part in
They played a very crucial role in that they were on the fence. And when they came down saying, yes, they thought it was a good idea to stay in, I think that made a very substantial difference to the way public opinion felt about it all.
They started on the fence for quite a long time.
Yes, that's right. But the fact they came down in favour at the end.
John Cole, give us a flavour of the press coverage of the campaign, the referendum campaign at the time, because we've heard that the Sun then, there was not yet the up yours, Delors bit at all, was strongly pro-Europe, we're better off in it. What was it like writing leaders for The Guardian?
Well, I mean, The Guardian was not like the rest of the press, never has been. Our line was very pro-European. But it's perfectly, if you look at the press as a whole, what has been said is perfectly true, that it was by no means a balanced press. It was entirely, almost entirely, on the pro side. And the reason for this is quite interesting. I mean, we had gone into Europe only 4 years previously. It would have been a bit astonishing if they had all changed their mind in that short period. And, I mean, that encourages me to ask Tony, when he talks about not forever, what did he mean in the passage he quoted from his diaries about, I can't remember the verb, but it was something like quailing before the decision of the British people.
Oh,
how long for?
Well, I mean,
a fortnight, a month?
I had campaigned for the referendum. When it reached a decision, I accepted it. But you see, democratic consent is not forever. And under this system, you are bound by the laws entered into by previous
governments. Tony Blair got the consent of the British House of Commons, right, wrong or indifferent, to go to war with Iraq. He had no contact with Brussels, which would have turned him down.
Jim Callaghan had referred to a rubber life raft for Harold Wilson. was it?
I would put it rather differently from that. I mean, obviously, since I have been writing editorials, very pro-European, I was relieved at the result. The other thing was that the Labour government did survive. Tony served on in it. Shirley served on in it.
How well bound were those wounds, though, within the party from your point of view?
Oh, there were wounds that exist because of the different attitudes. All political parties are coalitions. We're seeing that with the Conservatives at the present time. And so you're never going to get a permanent like-mindedness around the cabinet table of any political party. I see the 1975 referendum now as a necessary stile that we had to go over, but no more than that. In every generation, this issue is such a huge one that in every generation has to fight it out on its own terms, whether in this referendum or subsequently. It will go on well beyond all our lifetimes, this battle.
John Cole, Tom Spencer, John Mills, Tony Benn and Shirley Williams. Thank you all very much. Thank you.